5. Bear Down. In Panama, I found a spider that eats its own limbs during lean times. I am told they grow back. But though the distinction is razor thin, desperation is not the same thing as determination. Teona Dumisani Shiviniko, The Hangman's Replacement, Sprout of Disruption, 2013. If you believe the news reports, this is not a good time to be a polar bear. Over the past several years, there have been dozens of headlines that ran something like this. Polar bears are turning to cannibalism as Arctic ice disappears. Is global warming driving polar bears to cannibalism? Polar bear cannibalism linked to climate change. As a vertebrate zoologist, I was interested in determining whether or not a transition in polar bear diets had actually taken place. And if it had, I wondered whether we were involved. Polar bears, Ursus maritimus, Latin for marine bear, are among the world's largest carnivores, a diverse mammalian order whose members include cats, felids, dogs, canids, raccoons, procyonids, and weasels and their relatives, mustelids. They are, of course, famous for their meat-eating diets, and many of them share a characteristic known as carnassial teeth, or carnassials. In the majority of mammal species, when the jaw closes, the premolar and molar teeth on the upper jaw fit snugly into those on the lower jaw. This facilitates the crushing of food items before they're swallowed. In most carnivore species, though, when the jaws close, the last upper premolar and the first lower molar on each side shear past each other like blades, effectively slicing large pieces of meat into smaller pieces that can be readily swallowed. Carnassial dentition was lost in most bears as they evolved more omnivorous feeding habits. Here, the hard-to-digest plant material required a mashup by more traditional molars, thus increasing its surface area and allowing for more efficient breakdown by enzymes like cellulase. In polar bears, however, fully functional carnassials have apparently re-evolved, a reflection of the species' strict meat-eating diet, which consists primarily of ringed seals, Pusa hispida, and bearded seals, Erignathus barbatus. Secondarily evolved traits like carnassial teeth in polar bears are common in nature. For example, having inherited the ability to swim from their fishy ancestors, many ancient vertebrates lost the ability, and related features like fins, as they became more and more adapted to terrestrial lifestyles. Swimming re-evolved in some lineages, leading to creatures like seals and whales, whose fins are actually modified terrestrial limbs. Cannibalism has been recorded in at least 14 species of carnivores. In pumas, Puma concolor, lynx, leopards, Panthera pardus, and sea lions, Phocarctos hucerii, it appears to occur for many of the usual reasons, including stress due to lack of food, elimination of rivals, and increased mating opportunities. Heterocannibalism in this case, eating the cubs that another male sired, is clearly a reproductive strategy in male lions, Panthera leo, after taking over a pride. Through the practice of infanticide, the incoming males terminate the maternal investment in unrelated cubs. A lioness with cubs will not come into heat for a year and a half after giving birth, but similar to what has been observed in other mammals, a lioness that loses her cubs becomes sexually receptive almost immediately. Interestingly, females of a similarly social predator, also found on the African savanna, possess a potent defense against infanticide and cannibalism. This adaptation has also enabled females of this species to become the dominant clan members. How this phenomenon works is fascinating, although it requires a brief review of development genetics. An additional bonus for this approximately 60-second commitment will be an answer to one of life's great mysteries, namely, why do men have nipples, or penises for that matter? During early embryological development, mammal embryos are genderless. At a certain point, tiny buds of tissue grow into precursors of the penis and mammary glands. sex determination is based on the embryo having one of two combinations of the X and Y sex chromosomes. These combinations, XY or XX, act like two versions of a blueprint. The XY blueprint results in the production of the male hormone testosterone, a chemical messenger that stimulates the growth of the penis bud into a penis. Since testosterone prevents the further development of the mammary glands, this explains why males still have the nipples they grew as genderless embryos, but don't produce milk. Alternately, having two X chromosomes results in the production of estrogens, the primary female sex hormones, and these stimulate the production of mammary glands. The female hormones also put a halt to the growth of the penis bud, leaving behind the clitoris, a tiny erectile structure which, unlike the penis, is not involved in urination. In the spotted hyena, Crocuta crocuta, the developmental scenario described above has been flipped on its ear. Scientists believe that at some point in their evolutionary past, a genetic mutation initiated the production of higher levels of the male sex hormone testosterone in female spotted hyenas. As a result, bulked-up, hyper-aggressive females dominate every interaction with their male counterparts, with males even coming up short in the external genitalia department. Female hyenas develop a remarkably elongated clitoris, which resembles a longer version of the penis. Additionally, the normally lip-like vulva is fused closed, thus enabling females to urinate through their pseudopenises, or pseudopenes, the tips of which are also penetrated by the real McCoy during copulation. Completing the He-Man look, the sealed-up vulva forms a matching pseudoscrotum, within which deposits of fat stand in for a functioning pair of testicles. The female hyena's uniquely shaped external sex organs actually gave rise to a myth that these mammals are hermaphrodites. Although this is definitely not the case, the birth process is an extremely painful and dangerous experience for first-timers, and by now you may have guessed the reason. Large, full-term hyena fetuses must pass through the clitoris, which, if things proceed smoothly, causes it to tear open. Reportedly, stillbirths and instances of maternal mortality during delivery are high, but after the successful birth of the first litter, the clitoris never fully closes again, making subsequent births somewhat easier. So while some aspects of this adaptation sound counterproductive, the fact remains that Crocuta crocuta is the most successful mammalian predator in all of Africa. One reason may be related to the fact that, unlike in lions, there is little danger that males will attempt to kill and consume unrelated cubs. Females, on the other hand, have been known to do just that. All right now, what about those polar bears? In 2009, mainstream media outlets began reporting that polar bears were undergoing a serious change in dietary habits. The take-home message was that global warming had reduced the Arctic sea ice, thus resulting in shorter hunting seasons for the bears and fewer seal kills. As a consequence, the stressed-out bears were starving and resorting to cannibalism in order to survive. The problem with most of these stories was that the authors left out a rather important fact, and it was one that researchers have known for decades. According to wildlife biologist Mitchell Taylor, polar bears will readily eat other polar bears when they can do so without excessive risk of injury. In fact, males of most North American bear species will kill and eat conspecific cubs pretty much whenever they can get their paws on them. Researchers believe that infanticide during the breeding season may provide males with a reproductive opportunity as well as a nutritional reward, since, like the previously described lionesses, female polar bears will come into estrus more quickly if their offspring have been killed. Because of this, cannibalism has been, and continues to be, one of the greatest contributors to bear cub mortality, especially just after leaving the maternity den. The threat from adult males is one of the key reasons that mother bears are so protective of their cubs, and also explains why females give males such a wide berth when selecting maternity den sites. Recently, another probable cause of polar bear cannibalism was added to the mix. Because of incomplete reporting by the media, though, and a tendency to stress sensationalism over detail, the result has been a cannibalism-themed fiasco. The mess came about soon after the 2006 publication of a paper by Arctic researcher Stephen Amstrup. He and his co-workers were clearly alarmed by three incidents of cannibalism by polar bears in the southern Beaufort Sea, which occurred during a 2.5-month period. Two of the incidents involved the death and partial consumption of adult female bears. In one, the female's body was found inside a maternity den that collapsed during an attack by a predatory male bear. In the second case, the female polar bear was killed on the sea ice, presumably not long after emerging from its den with a cub. In the third case, a 1-year-old male was killed and partially consumed by an adult male. According to Amstrup and his colleagues, these attacks were unique because they had taken place in areas not generally frequented by male polar bears. Each year, once the Arctic sea ice melts and polar bears are forced onto the land, males are usually found near the coast, while females and their cubs venture farther inland and away from the males. In the cases documented by Amstrup, the researchers concluded that the underlying causes for our cannibalism observations are not known. They suggested that the incidents could have been chance observations of previously unobserved rare events, or even a single rogue bear that adopted a hunting strategy including cannibalism. What got the media machine cranking, though, was the researchers' hypothesis that these attacks and subsequent cannibalism might have resulted from male polar bears being the first population segment to show adverse effects of the large ice retreats of recent years. We hypothesize that nutritional stresses related to the longer ice-free seasons that have occurred in the Beaufort Sea in recent years may have led to the cannibalism incidents we observed in 2004. The problem was not in the presentation of Amstrup's hypothesis, but the fact that many of the media reports that followed neglected to mention that cannibalism in polar bears was already known to be a naturally occurring event, with the first published report surfacing in 1897. By leaving out this vital fact, those working to publicize the effects of global climate change suddenly found themselves on the wrong end of some serious butt-kicking from climate change deniers. These zealots were quick to point out that cannibalism was quite common in polar bears, and that the attempt to link polar bear cannibalism to what they referred to as the global warming hoax was just another instance in which scientists were flat-out lying to the public. In reality, modern researchers have been reporting on non-climate change-related infanticide and cannibalism in polar bears for decades, a point Amstrup and his co-authors also discussed in their paper, and a point neglected in most of the media coverage. Ultimately, though, the authors of the sensationalized headlines ignored that information. Instead, they cobbled together their stories from non-scientific sources, including a short article by another non-scientist. This one warned of graphic photos and opened with the line, "Cannibalism is not part of the polar bear's M.O." As a result, a valid scientific hypothesis, global climate change has led to a reduction in Arctic sea ice, and this may be causing increased incidences of cannibalism in polar bears, now takes a back seat to a distorted take on the subject, as well as a deceptive but well-executed argument by climate change deniers. This would be my first experience with cannibalism-related sensationalism, but it would definitely not be the last.